Hello and welcome to the inaugural episode of Media MD. I'm Ruben Morehouse.
And I'm Elliot Diebold.
On Media MD, each week we prescribe each other a piece of media or pop culture that the other person has somehow missed.
Cool. So I think I'm going first.
Yep, sure.
So today I'm bringing the book by Matthew Riley called Seven Ancient Wonders.
Seven Ancient Wonders.
For those of you in the States, Seven Deadly Warriors. It's one of those books that
Seven Deadly Warriors?
Seven Deadly Wonders.
Okay.
Warriors is the sequel.
Oh, boy.
In fact, while I was doing the research for this one, I found out there's a fourth book coming out, and that got very excited.
What's the time gap between these books?
He writes, a lot of other books. So, there was another one called The Graves of Giants coming out in between. So, if he's doing them in order, it's probably, I think he brings out about a book a year. But anyway, yeah, it was one of those books that got renamed when it went to the States. Mm. I think the first Harry Potter had that done.
So is he an Australian author?
Yeah, he's Australian. Yeah. He's from Sydney.
Mm. Local boy.
Yeah. But I'd describe him as the Michael Bay of authors.
Okay, so in my head now, I'm imagining a lot of writing about explosions.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird thing. So it's honestly, the plots are fairly...
Mm.
Bland.
Yep,
The characters are very flat.
Yep, Michael Bay.
But the action is really well written, and that's an odd thing to say about a novel.
What? How do you describe well written? Because I'm imagining for Michael Bay, it's well done practical effects and things that you'd see obviously staples, explosions, and lens flares.
Yeah. It's big action scenes. So the Seven Ancient Wonders series is very Indiana Jonesy.
Mm.
It's a modern day guy goes and raids old ruins and stuff for treasures.
It's a national treasure.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't know, Michael Bay just writes really good action scenes, and I honestly feel like you'll probably have to read it to understand that statement because it's very thrilling. And they're all very intense, high octane, and he's very good at creating these intricate fight scenes where there's 10 groups of people shooting each other, and you can sort of completely follow what's happening, and also. Yeah, I don't know. It's a really unique thing, and it's a shame that he can't back it up by creating more interesting plots and characters.
More well-rounded author.
Yeah. But he's, and it's also a shame, he's had five or six of his books go to become movies, and then that, for whatever real reason, they've all failed. The movies have never come out. The deals sort of either at the script writing phase pre-production. No, yeah, they've never even gone into production, as far as I'm aware. And that doesn't really make sense to me, because these would be
much better movies than they are books,
One of my favourite parts as well is at the end of each book, there's an interview with him.
Mm.
I don't know who's asking the questions. Yeah. I believe he may be interviewing himself.
He's interviewing himself, for sure.
But they're, I get that they're kind of comedy gold, because he talks about the plot and the characters, and I don't know if he wrote a very different book to what I read, but it's very interesting.
Yeah.
I often get a kick out of reading it at the end. He talks about this character development that sort of went on through the book that apparently went straight over my head because they were just shooting the bad guys.
Yes. It reminds me of this interview. I saw an interview once with M. Night Shyamalan where he was...
I know the guy.
Sure, where he was talking about how his films had just gotten these... had been critically panned, and he felt that it was unjustified. And it's just he's in his own little bubble of... Tommy Wiseau. Exactly. He sounds like a real Tommy Wiseau or a...
Yeah,
Neil Breen.
I don't think he's quite that delusional as Tommy Wiseau. Maybe the M. Night Shyamalan's a good comparison. Mm. It's he just sort of... He talks about character development and seems what the fuck are you talking about?
Okay. So this one you have in front of you, The Great Zoo of China, is another one from the same series, is that right?
No, this is just the same author.
Okay.
I think this was his most recent book until September this year when the fourth... In the Seven Ancient Wonders chapters comes out.
Okay, so let's talk about Seven Ancient Wonders.
Yeah.
So he's going to each of the Ancient Wonders?
Yeah.
I
don't want to spoil the plot too much, but essentially there ends up being this big ancient conspiracy, sort of Dan Brownish, but not as clever. big conspiracy about, essentially he has to go to each of the Seven Ancient Wonders and sort of do some stuff, otherwise the world's gonna end.
Oh boy.
There's bits of magic and
mysticism. Is it kind of 2012 Mayan prophecy style?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay.
And then like that whole angle really takes off in the second and third books.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how many of the ancient wonders does he visit?
He visits all seven. So it's the seven ancient wonders, and then the second book is called
Does another lap around.
It's called the Six Sacred Stones. And then,
oh, I see.
And then book three is the Five Greatest Warriors. Oh my god,
it's counting down.
Yeah, it is.
What happens when he gets to the one?
He sacred said that'll whatever. Be the final chapter. Oh, so you know, zero. Like 2038 or whatever.
There's it's no gonna blast
be,
off.
It's gonna be thrilling. All
right, 2038, Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, at this rate, but yeah, so it's sort of each one's a separate chapter dealing with a new sort of set of artifacts, but yeah, it's very Indiana Jonesy, Uncharted, National Treasure, okay. Tomb Raider.
Okay, yeah, I get the kind of genre that we're going for here. Yeah. Indiana Jones was the.
Yeah,
the pioneer, right?
And it's a genre I personally love. I always love these kinda stories.
Like action adventure.
Yeah, exactly. And the old, like, you know, it's like, oh, ancient cultures take all their ruins for our stuff.
So who's our main character? Who's our main well-developed or not quite character?
So this is actually the only one, I believe, except for maybe a few of his one-off novels, that stars an Australian guy. So we've got this guy called Jack West Jr.
Jack West Jr.
Yeah, he's like Australian ex-SAS or something, but he's just like a very generic all-round action hero.
He's just an action hero.
Except what separates him from the rest is that he actually has this like bionic arm.
Oh, man.
Because his arm got cut off from like the elbow down, I think it was. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and so his nerdy friend, who's called like Wizard, I think. It's a code name. He has like a real.
He has an actual name, human name. But yeah, of course.
His code name's Wizard. And like they all have code names.
What's Jack West Jr.'s code name? Is it like Soldier or like Scorpion?
I've actually forgotten. No, it's like Jackal or.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe that's his enemy. It's some kind of dog related thing. Anyway, because he's loyal and shit. There's symbolism there.
Okay. Yeah, it's well written for sure. Yeah. And Wizard is a tech wizard.
He
presumably.
Is, yes. And so he built multiple Jack layers. West Jr. a bionic arm, which certainly comes in handy.
Is it like Inspector Gadget style? Like it can has like
no. Nah, it's just it's almost like imagine if he was super powered, but only in half of his left arm.
Well, like Winter Soldier, right?
Yeah, except only half the arm, so he's like half as cool as Bucky.
Right, he's half a Winter Soldier. So strength, just and I assume he can like plug it into USB ports and hack things.
No, it's literally just like
just super strength. Strong.
Yeah.
Oh, that's kind of a bummer. Maybe they're saving that for.
But yeah, he uses it pretty well. Like it comes up in one of these action scenes. But yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So yeah, I was like, oh, book that'll be classy, and then I picked this one. So no. But yeah, so that's what I'm prescribing you this week to catch up with something you missed.
And we are back. Whoosh. There's the sound effect. Thank you. God. So Seven Deadly Wonders.
Yep.
I read it. I did it in three sessions. So about a quarter of the book, a quarter of the book, and then I just fucking gunned it and binged it. It was that good,
huh?
I mean, I'm going to set the tone and say there is so much wrong with this book, but it still undeniably was a great experience for me. Like, it was just like, I wouldn't even say, like, it had a lot of things where I would say so bad it's good applies, but even just, it was weirdly gripping, not even on that level, just on a straight level.
So I think that's sort of that writing style I was talking about, where like he has those action scenes that are very intricate and compelling, despite the rest of it sort of being so flat.
Basically, like the characters are basically not there. The plot is very generic and very stupid. Let's talk about. You mentioned in the preamble part of this episode that it would really work as a movie, and that, I think, is the most true statement I've ever heard in my life. He writes this book like he's writing a screenplay.
I agree. And I think if you went to read more of his books, you realize it's the same.
I'm going to point to a couple of examples. Each scene basically has its own title, and you can see clear breaks where
and this is where the camera will cut, and we'll cut to the next scene. You can really feel it.
And he even includes, like, little maps.
Yeah, so I don't know if we discussed that.
I didn't bring that
up. There are pictures. But... this is basically a picture book. I'd say each big set piece has 3 or 4 maps that describes the interior layout and all the traps and how they all work.
Yeah. And again, that would help for, like, pulling it into a movie, because he's done some of the set design.
It helps... because his descriptions otherwise are not good enough to... like, if you didn't have the pictures, you would not understand what the hell was going on. Oh, yeah.
Like, you're right. He sort of relies on you knowing what the map is. So when he says they're hiding behind the pillar near blah, and there is, like, you need to know.
You can see my book is full of post-it notes here, because there are so many things that I wanted to talk about with this movie. There is one part where he's talking about a map or something. I'm not going to bother looking through my 20 or 30 post-it notes to find it, but... instead of writing anything, he says, and they looked at a map and it looked like this. And then there's a doctor and then there's a picture of a map. And it's just like, all right, is that really what we're doing here?
Yeah, his writing style's not the most complex.
Yes. And there's one more thing I'd like to point out, which is multiple times throughout this book, he'll cut halfway through a sentence for suspense.
Oh yeah.
He'll
at put the like end a of a dash chapter or something.
No, not even at the end of a chapter. He'll be like, and the helicopter blew up, ... And then he starts a new line, ... Because it got shot by this other helicopter. And he leaves little line breaks for you to build up the suspense. And that's something I really like about this book.
I mean, it's tacky, just so crazy.
It's so, just nonsense in so much of it. But it really works, for sure.
Because this one, one of the things that features in a lot of his books, and I'm pretty sure it's in this one, is the mag hook. Did they have that in this one?
I don't think so. There are grappling hooks that they use at certain points. Like, okay, at one point, guy attaches some explosives to a grappling hook and shoots it to blow up a roof or something. A lot of explosions, as we mentioned. Yes. As you mentioned, there are a lot of explosions in this book. And there are a lot of traps in this book. This book is mainly about traps.
And so that's probably partially unique to this one. Yeah. It sort of falls in with that concept that they're invading these ancient ruins.
Yeah, it's like Tomb Raider in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And I think that was probably when he was writing this, that was like the theme. He was coming up with all the traps.
Yeah. And I would say the traps are one of the main parts where the diagrams help, because some of these traps were so nonsensical. Like, there are traps with crocodiles and snakes that are in ruins that are thousands of years old. And as I'm reading it, I just can't help but think, How did they survive in this? He must have created all these mini ecosystems that just somehow funnel crocodiles into these traps.
Very complicated. My favorite part, maybe I've just forgotten this explanation because I haven't read the book for quite a few years, but so essentially the plot is they need to get all the parts of the capstone.
They need to find these 7 golden parts of the Great Pyramid of Giza, which were sitting at the top of the Great Pyramid, and then they use it to conduct this ritual.
Yeah.
Which can either be done to save the world or to attain ultimate power, basically. Yeah.
And yet, all of these parts were hidden behind deadly traps, meaning that it was quite likely no one would be able to get them, and thus the world would end.
Presumably, it's kind of... so this was built by, in part, Alexander the Great, and in part, some pharaoh, Imhotep 3 or something, I can't remember, but presumably what they were thinking was, in 2,500 years' time, because it works on this 2,500 year cycle, or 3,000 years, whatever it is, in that amount of time, we'll still be around and we'll be able to collect all the pieces, but we don't want anyone else to be able to do it unless we specifically have told them to do it.
Yeah.
We don't want anyone but our followers to be able to do it. And that brings up something else that I'd like to talk about, which is that he takes a lot of creative license with making up this cult, the cult of Amon-Ra, then injecting it into the Freemasons, followers of it. The Catholic Church, it's revealed, shockingly in this book, is just a front for Egyptian worship, which was one of my favourite parts of the book.
I mean, that was sort of where I brought that Dan Brown comparison previously. Yes. It's a bit of a Dan Brown trope as well. It's like, oh, this big ancient society that's hundreds of years old, you thought this is what it was about? Well, it's about some sort of paganism.
The Catholic Church is not actually about Catholicism. It's very... and it even says thinly veiled in the book, thinly veiled Egyptian worship, and they point to, like, one example which can support this. Like, Jesus kind of shares some similarities with blah. And, I mean, I'm not a religious man, and I know that, you know, a lot of, like, Christmas can be traced back to a pagan holiday and blah, 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 but even so, it's very... he takes it pretty far, doesn't he?
See, because what's then interesting is Jesus is actually a central part of the plot of the third book.
Ah, that's pretty weird.
Yeah. And it starts to become a bit convoluted by there. And again, it's been quite a while since I read that book, but I think that's one of those situations where he just tends to forget how much he pretended like Christianity wasn't a thing in the first
book. Yeah.
And it just is again.
Suddenly it's a thing again.
But, I mean, a bit of a spoiler for the third one, but it's about the five greatest warriors. And so they have to go find these things in the tombs of the five greatest warriors.
And who are the five greatest warriors?
So Jesus is one of them.
Of course.
Because the
known for his sword fighting ability, yeah. Jesus.
Well, so the term warrior turns out to be a very loose translation.
Right. They just mean powerful people.
Essentially becomes the five greatest people in history. So I think Genghis Khan is another one.
Okay.
King Arthur.
Okay.
And then the thing that it turns out...
Who's the other ones?
What?
Come on.
I can't remember one, but the fourth one ends up being Jack West Jr.
What? No, it doesn't.
At the end. They can't figure out who the fifth one is.
But Jack West Jr., we should point out, if anyone is not following along, is the protagonist of the series.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
So it turns out he was a chosen one all along?
Essentially, yeah. So the fifth... I keep saying the fifth and sixth book because they have five and six.
They're counting down.
Second and third book establish a lot more that even before this capstone thing, there's a lot more to that. And there was like an ancient advanced, like, probably comparable to like the Atlantean race.
Right.
This advanced one that set up all these rituals and all this magic.
Right, okay.
And they apparently had the ability to see the future.
Well, now I just really want to... read the other books, yeah. But we'll get to those maybe in a later episode, maybe not in the podcast at all.
It's more of the same, so if you...
I definitely want to read it then. One thing I'd like to talk about is, you said this was his first book that features an Australian protagonist.
I think so, yeah.
This book, and the ending in particular, I don't know if you remember...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
...is very pro-Australian.
It is.
In a way that I, as an Australian, very much enjoyed.
And I remember somebody, like, reading a discussion once about one of why his movies would never, or why his books never became movies. Mm. And part of that was like, so a lot of the other books really pander to the US. So it's like,
right.
It's the same character as Jack West Jr. Like, it's
but
just with
a US
different
Marine
name.
Instead
yeah,
of
it's a US yeah. Marine, and it's all very pro-US. And, like, I remember somebody, like, reading something where somebody was saying that they thought he was doing that because it's easier to get Hollywood to buy into it if it's very pro-US.
For this book, he's just like, fuck it, I'm going back to my roots.
Yeah, and even the latest one of those, so it's the Scarecrow series, is the one where it's the US Marine, who's basically the same character. And in the latest one of those, it actually...
his left arm is burning instead of his right arm.
It goes very anti-US in the fourth book in that series, and I think that might just be the point where one of his movie deals went down, he's like, screw it!
Screw the US, screw Hollywood, I'll show them what I really think of
so
them
that's one
through
where,
the lens of Scarecrow.
Yeah, I forget the name of that book, but it's like China versus the US is the driving thing, and the US team of Marines that go there, they eventually decide that they're siding with China on this one, and
right.
And sort of start, there's a plot by the US to like kill everyone in China.
So now in this book, the US are one of the main groups of villains, the other being Europe / the Vatican.
Yes.
So this book is Jack West Jr. and his team are kind of outside of... There's Europe and America fighting for
and
there's
like
competition.
This mini conglomerate.
And then there's just a couple of other countries, Ireland, Iran, and...
New Zealand, Australia.
New Zealand, yeah. And they just kind of have their own little... They don't want anyone to get this superpower.
Yeah.
So that at the end of the book, it's a fight between Europe and America to see who's going to control this magical power that will give them dominance over the world for the next 1,000 years or whatever. And Europe is knocked out of the race, and it seems like America's going to come in, and then Jack West Jr. comes in. And at the end, it's revealed that Jack West Jr. tricked them into doing the ritual for for Australians.
Yes.
And so now, at the end of the book, there's a quote from Jack West Jr. where he says, I mean, they're talking about how Australians basically are now superpowered.
It's more like, in terms of like a combat with another nation, like Australians are sort of invincible through like, I think they go into it more, maybe, I thought it was at the end of this book, it might be the next one, but it's like when all the Australians fighting in the Middle East, it's like whenever they're about to die, it was like the bomb just wouldn't work or the enemy's guns would jam.
Yeah, so there's a scene in here, and he might retcon how exactly the powers work, but Jack West Jr., the thing happens, and then Jack West Jr. is an Australian, so he has this power, and someone is about to shoot him, and he makes the gun explode.
Okay.
And it doesn't shoot him.
Yeah, so they definitely don't have, like conscious superpowers like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but in this book, it seems like they really do. And so it ends with Jack West Jr. talking about how Australians are not a warfaring people, and so
it's fine.
It's for the best that they have this power. and they won't know about the power. They won't know that they can make guns explode, but yeah, they can do it secretly. And so it's a very weird ending where it's just kind of Matthew Riley being like, yeah, suck it. You know, Australians are the best. We're the best country, and now we're superpowered.
It gets even better. So the first chapter of the next book is, it turns out that on the exact opposite side of the world to the Pyramids of Giza,
like through the Earth on the exact opposite point?
Okay. In the Easter Islands.
Okay.
There's an underground pyramid with a dark capstone, and a year later they do a spell there and it undoes the spell from the first book. Like, so he just sort of, in the first chapter of the second book, immediately just undoes.
Because you can't continue a book where one nation in the world just has superpowers. It makes no sense.
Yeah, and then the second book becomes all about, like, so then it turns out
there are so many logistical problems. Like, what about immigration? What about expats going overseas? Do they maintain the power? Like, what happens?
Or is it just indigenous aborigines?
Because Jack West Jr. is a white man, presumably. I don't think it might be explicitly said, but...
Yeah, I think he is, yeah.
So, colonial Australians who are really just long ago criminal British, do British have this power? Are British criminals also? Like...
If Australia has the power and they invade somewhere else, so technically those people are now Australians.
Yeah, that place becomes an Australian colony.
But then they're rebelling.
Yeah. What about Tasmania? Tasmania is not part of the Australian mainland, but, you know, do the Tasmanians have the power?
I think it's just chalk it up to magic.
I think you definitely have to retcon it because it was too inconsistent. Yeah.
But the second book, it does that that sort of silly thing that all the sequels will do where it's just like escalates. So you know how the driving plot of this first one is a giant sunspot that's going to take over the world.
Not destroy the world, unless they do this ritual. It's going to basically destroy the world.
Yes.
It's going to cause hyper-global warming, basically. Yes.
So the second book, then it turns out that was actually just a lead-up to... There's actually like a dark sun made out of dark matter, so you can't see it, but it's coming into the solar system and it'll tear the whole thing up. So it's just like, so he goes from like a big sun spot to now the bad guy is a whole sun.
A whole sun, yeah. And then it's going to be a whole solar system is the next one.
And so then they need to do this big magic ritual all over the world to stop that sun
from
destroying the whole solar system.
What's the next book called? The Six...
Six Sacred Stones.
Oh, that's not as gripping, I don't think.
No, it's not. And then it goes to Five Greatest Warriors, and then I can't remember what the new one's called that comes out in a few months.
Because in this movie, the Seven Ancient Wonders are a thing. I mean, some of them are fictitious, like the Hanging Gardens, which does appear in this book.
Yeah, I mean, they were meant to have existed at some point, but...
See, I don't know if the Hanging Gardens was meant to exist.
I'm fairly sure it is one of the Seven Ancient Wonders.
I think it is, but I think it also is a bit...
Well, I mean, nobody, like... It's not still around.
And I don't think it's ever been found.
Yeah, exactly.
But it is found in this book.
Exactly.
And this is one of the scenes where I can really imagine it as a movie, where they're entering into this cavern and there's this giant stalactite in front of them, which just has this kind of circular path going, a spiral path around it that just is full of like overgrown. And you can just think to yourself, this should be...
A movie.
You can see it the camera panning up and zooming out as they see this giant cavern that they're in. Yeah, that should definitely be a movie. Now, one other thing I want to talk about is, you mentioned in the preamble to this episode that he has a bionic arm, but I think you're being intentionally vague because there are a lot of things in this book that are just, I think awesome is the word. Awesome is the word you're looking for, right? Where it's just awe-inspiring, or the original Mini Awesome, where it just fills you with awe. There's a lot of science fiction nonsense in this book. Like, they have a jet. It's a 747, but it doesn't fly normally. It kind of hovers, right?
Yeah, it's very loose interpretation of physics.
Yes. And there is a mechanical arm. Jack West Jr. has a mechanical arm.
Yeah.
And he has a pet falcon, which he can command and understands him perfectly. There are a lot of nonsense things. I want to talk about how he lost his arm, which is that...
Yes.
So that was actually...
I tried to get my sisters to read this book, and that was the point where they stopped. When he lost his arm...
That's interesting.
That was where they were like, this book is terrible. Yes. Because it's about one chapter in from memory.
Yeah, I think it's one or two chapters in, they describe how he lost his arm, and it's just... It's insane. So the plot is there are these two oracles that are born in this ceremony 10 years before the book started. And so he gets there, and The Vatican has just taken away the first oracle, and it turns out, oh no, there were twins, and this second oracle is being born.
Yeah.
And so Jack West Jr. goes in and gets the second child, and the chamber starts filling up with lava. and he notices that there's a button behind some lava that he has to push. And so what he does is he grabs his hand and he reaches in through the lava and pushes the button as his hand gets burnt off and is melted off, and then he's getting built a robotic arm later. But that's not interesting because he's just reached through lava to press a button. And there's just a lot of scenes like that where nonsense happens, but it's just so... It's so engaging to read about this nonsensical thing happening that you just can't put it down.
Yeah. I think I also said that the bionic arm gets used a lot, which
now that's now, a lie. Now, that's a lie. There is one scene where he uses it to punch a dude, and the dude is just like, "Oh, fuck you," and punches him back.
Yeah.
But I think that's the only time it's ever explicitly referred to.
So there's a scene, I think I was thinking of a scene that must be in the second book, and it's with Jack West Jr.'s father. Who's the
Jack West Senior?
Yes, who's the bad
not
guy?
Not mentioned in this book.
So
at
he's the bad guy in the second book. There, mm-hmm. So I'm clearly showing the years since I've read it. So I don't know if you want me to spoil too much what happens in
do
this
it,
scene.
Do it.
So his father essentially crucifies him on a rock.
Jesus fucking Christ! This book.
there's a hole in the ground that's the same size as the rock. He's on like a square rock.
Okay.
And so they put him on the side facing the hole, and they push the rock
and so it's
down into the hole. Yeah, so it fits perfectly in the hole, and it's the rock's just going to squish him.
Hmm.
And so eventually, they think he's dead for like a quarter of the book, and then eventually he comes back, and like what he did is because they put it through his robotic hand because his dad like either forgot or didn't know that he had a
but
robotic
hand. But it's
pretty
obvious that he's got it, right?
I guess not. But anyway, so he pulls that one out. And basically manages to like stand with his elbow up, and that keeps the rock from squishing him. And then he pulls his feet and hands out, like he grabs the nail that has his hand in and pulls it out.
No, he doesn't.
Yeah, he does. and then manages to survive being crucified and crushed by the rock. And it's just like, it's just so stupid. And I love it.
It's great. This, yeah. See, in some ways, this book is so bad it's good. And then in other ways, it's just very engaging despite... Or because of how absurd it is and how it doesn't take itself seriously, thank fucking God. Because if it did, it would be a disaster.
And so I think that's where the interviews come in at the end. Because the interviews give
you
a bit of
let's talk about these interviews. They give you an insight into Matthew Riley's brain, don't they?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because you would think from those interviews that he takes himself quite seriously. But the book doesn't give you that impression.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't. Because...
Like, the book knows that it's almost a popcorn book.
Yeah. So... One of the questions here is, what did you try to do differently with this book? And his response to the question that he's presumably asking himself is that he wanted to create... He says, for me, the key difference between Seven Deadly Wonders and my previous books is the theme of family in it. And of course,
I guess that's
loosely into that, because these kind of international conglomerate of nations have each sent one or two people, and they kind of become this ramshackle family.
Yeah.
But it's clear that he is taking that far more seriously than anyone else does in the book. But yeah, this... I don't know how to describe this book. If I had to sum it up in one word, I would say this book is insane. No, awesome. Awesome is awesome. The one word you need. Awesome. Okay. This is definitely an awesome book. It's terrible, but it's amazing at the same time. And so I would give it a... God, a 7.5 out of 10, maybe. Yeah, I think a 7.5 out of 10 is justified here.
It's worth experiencing, I think. Matthew Riley book. I don't know if you have to read all of them.
I mean, I don't know. I think everyone should read one. I can't give my stamp to any of the other ones, but this one is just fucking balls to the wall crazy. Yeah, loved it.